Saints in the Land of the Long White Cloud by Rebecca M. Taylor, Assistant Editor. In New Zealand, members draw strength from temple attendance, their increased recognition in the country, and the vibrant mix of cultures they share. Evidence of God's hand is abundant in New Zealand, or Aotearoa, Maori for Land of the Long White Cloud. The verdant landscape itself testifies of a divine creator, from the miles of windswept beaches to the bush-covered hills and the rugged mountain peaks that stretch toward the sky. Indeed, the New Zealand national anthem is a prayer to God. God of nations, at thy feet in the bonds of love we meet. Hear our voices, we entreat. God defend our free land. Like so many other countries, however, New Zealand is increasingly following the trends of the world, including the trend away from organized religion. Yet numerous Latter-day Saints here, anchored with a long history in the country, are holding firmly to their faith, fortifying their testimonies through temple attendance, heightening awareness of the church through public affairs efforts, and drawing strength from the unique blend of cultures that forms their membership. Faithful stalwart members. Latter-day Saint missionaries first came to New Zealand in October of 1854. Converts were few until the 1880s, when missionary work commenced among the Maori, the indigenous people of New Zealand. Many Maori felt a spiritual and cultural connection with the church and believed the coming of the missionaries to be the fulfillment of Maori prophecy. Consequently, numerous Maori joined the church, helping it establish a firm foothold in the country. Today, while a majority of Latter-day Saints in New Zealand are of Maori or other Polynesian ancestry, the church is growing among those of many different ethnic backgrounds, and while most Latter-day Saints are first- or second-generation members, it is not uncommon to meet people whose history in the church reaches back several generations. Gloria Kelly's history has been intertwined with that of the church for many years. A fourth-generation member, she was baptized in the Auckland Harbor on March 8, 1952, and was among the first students to attend the Church College of New Zealand, a church-owned high school in Templeview near Hamilton. The term college is often applied to high schools in New Zealand. She vividly remembers the bustle of activity in Templeview as labor missionaries rushed to put the final touches on the college and on the gleaming new temple before it was dedicated in April 1958, and she was in the congregation when President David O. McKay, 1873 to 1970, dedicated the sacred building. She also recalls the heady days of working with members of her close-knit branch to build a new meeting house, one of the first in the Auckland area. Now there are 10 stakes and numerous meeting houses in the region. As she has seen the church grow and progress, she has also observed her once isolated country rush to catch up with the rest of the world. Yet with the progress in New Zealand have come challenges. When I first joined the church, no one in New Zealand did anything on a Sunday besides go to church or spend time with their families, she says. All the shops were closed. Now we've got Sunday shopping, rugby games, and so on. Elder Lindsay Dill, an Area Authority 70 in the Australia-New Zealand area, says the country was religiously inclined until fairly recently. A generation ago, most people at least would go to Sunday school, so they had a religious foundation, he says. There's been a marked change in the last 10 to 15 years with a move away from the churches to being seekers of leisure. Many factors have contributed to the growing secularization of the country. As in other developed countries, the increasing influence of television, movies, and the internet have diverted attention away from religion. A ban on Sunday shopping was lifted just over a decade ago, leading people to flock to the stores rather than the churches. Working hours have been increased, with a six-day work week being common, leaving little time for other activities. In addition, the country is extremely sports-minded, and participation in athletics takes a sizable portion of New Zealanders' time. In fact, many make the tongue-in-cheek remark that the national religion is rugby. It's the Super Bowl almost every day of the year, says Elder Glenn L. Rudd, a former member of the 70 who has spent many years in the country. The traditional family is also becoming less common here, with more and more couples opting to live together before marriage or choosing not to marry at all. The number of couples living in these de facto relationships increased 46% between 1991 and 1996. Yet the influence of the gospel is helping many Latter-day Saint families combat these trends. "We have very faithful, stalwart members here," says Elder Dill. "To be a Latter-day Saint in New Zealand, you are really different, so you've got to be very strong in defending your faith. We have many faithful members who give their all in building the kingdom. It can be especially challenging for young people to be confronted with so many temptations, yet most notably in areas where local leadership is strong and the institute program is thriving, there are many examples of youth and young adults who are firm in their faith." Remarks Scott Butters, president of the Wellington Stake and director of the Wellington Institute of Religion, "What impresses me is that so many of the kids here in the Wellington area love the Lord and stay with Him all the way in spite of everything they're facing. They are wise enough to say the Lord comes first." 20-year-old Cherie Siali is an example of one such vibrant young church member. She joined the church at age 9, together with other members of her family, and her Samoan-born father is now bishop of the Tawa Ward, Wellington Stake. Cherie points to the influence of her parents, youth leaders, and the institute program in helping her stay strong. "When I was in a certain situation, I just imagined what my parents would think, and that helped me to know the right thing to do." Additionally, she says, "The Young Women program really helps you during that age, just to know there are other people like you with the same standards and beliefs. Even though at times it may seem hard, it helps to know that other people are facing the same challenges you are." Now that she is older, the Institute program has taken on that role. "Institute is quite popular in Wellington," she says. "If we don't attend, President Butters will ring us up and say, 'I didn't see you at Institute last week.'" Currently, Cherie is influencing other young people as she teaches early morning seminary in her ward. A continual emphasis on the temple. New Zealand was among the first countries outside the United States to have a temple, and consequently church members here have the blessing of being temple-aware. Many members say this has helped them have an eternal perspective and hold fast to that which is most important in their lives. Since 1958, when the temple was dedicated, there has been a continual emphasis on the temple, says temple president and former member of the 70, Rulon G. Craven. "The temple is the doctrinal icon of the saints in New Zealand. Because of the high cost of literature here, many saints can't afford to buy church books. There's not a lot of individual study except in the scriptures. I think they get a lot of their doctrine from the temple." For many church members, particularly in the South Island, getting to the temple means traversing long distances, and it represents a sacrifice in both time and money. Some members travel 24 hours or more to reach the temple. Noeline Odgers of the Christchurch Stake says that those sacrifices help members appreciate the sacredness of the temple experience. "The rewards are great, and it's so much sweeter for us," she says. Noeline and her husband, Alistair, have made it a goal to take their 4 children to the temple yearly so that they can do baptisms for the dead. "We find it keeps them focused. It just keeps that desire in their hearts to be valiant," she says. Shane and Nori Kariyama of the Timaru Branch, Christchurch Stake, radiate excitement as they share the story of their conversion and their feelings for the temple. They were baptized in 1998, and the following year, together with their 2 children, they were sealed as a family. Their youngest child was born in the covenant in 2000. "You've got to have the goal of going to the temple so you have a better understanding of your purpose," says Shane. "Because we've received the blessings of the temple, it's really kept Noni and me strong." Breaking down barriers. While the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the 6th largest church in the country, many New Zealanders know little about it. Yet as members gain confidence and participate more actively in their communities, the church's presence is becoming increasingly known. "In the church, we've probably been somewhat insular. We've tended to do a lot of things on our own, says Stephen Kuang, president of the Auckland Panamera Stake and Multistake Chair of Public Affairs for Auckland. It's only recently that we've been opening ourselves for the community to see us. Sydney Shepherd, National Director for Public Affairs, says that one of the challenges the church faces in New Zealand is in trying to persuade government, community, and other religious leaders that we are just regular people. But there has been an opening of doors with leaders that wouldn't have been possible 5 or 10 years ago. We've seen the breaking down of barriers and the corresponding change in attitude in people not of our faith. An activity that has helped the church become better known in the Auckland area is the staging of an annual Family Week. For the past 7 years, the church, together with other religious and civic organizations, has sponsored the event in the 5 cities of the area. During the week, various seminars and family-oriented activities are held. Each has the full support of the local mayors. President Kyung says, "When we started, the area presidency and church public affairs made it very clear that the messages we needed to get across were, 1, we are good neighbors. 2, we are a Christ-centered church." Another event that has generated positive publicity is the annual church temple lights display, which began in 1985. The largest Christmas lights display in the country, it attracted more than 145,000 visitors during December 2000. Church musical groups perform each night during the month, and starting in December 2000, various political, civic, and business leaders turn on the lights and deliver a Christmas message. Last December, Prime Minister Helen Clark was among the invited VIPs who attended. As people come to view the lights, says President Craven, they see the temple and feel the sacredness of it. Other successful public affairs and missionary efforts have been organized by staff members at the Temple Visitor Center. The center sponsors musical programs and firesides, some of which are held in remote locations. The firesides have generated numerous missionary referrals. Additional public affairs efforts have been reaping results. For example, members have placed church materials in many local libraries, most of which had stocked little church literature. The librarians don't know what is accurate Latter-day Saint material and what isn't, says Nolene Oetgers. So we've contributed church publications, and then we educate the members to use these church library books as a resource. A Church for All Cultures. Latter-day Saint congregations in New Zealand are noted for their friendliness, and visitors entering a typical meeting house will likely be greeted with a friendly hug and kiss on the cheek. Much of that warmth of spirit comes from the influence of Polynesian members. Approximately 80% of church members are Maori or come from nearby Pacific Islands, particularly Samoa and Tonga, while 20% are of European descent, Pekaha. Yet in the country as a whole, the reverse is true. 72% of the population is of European descent, while 14.5% are Maori, and the remaining 13.5% are Pacific Islander, Asian, or of other ethnic backgrounds. The mix of cultures is a great blend, observes President Craven. Gloria Kelly agrees that each of the cultures brings its own unique strengths, yet she notes there's got to be a certain amount of give and take. The Europeans get used to the fact that the Polynesians are more informal, while the Polynesians get used to the fact that Europeans are more formal. But the wonderful thing is that we've got a common bond, the gospel of Jesus Christ. For many first-generation members with a strong cultural heritage, some cultural tugging is a challenge. Each must ask, is my first priority my culture or my religion? Salisi Utiliti Lavia, president of the Christ Church Stake, knows these challenges firsthand as a native of Samoa. I let people know that there is no culture more important than the culture of the gospel of Jesus Christ, he says. Often our leaders tell us there are some good things about a culture to bring to the church, but there are other things that are not relevant. That is what I am trying to teach. Some New Zealanders have perceived the church as being a Maori church or an American church, but public affairs and missionary efforts are helping to show that the church is for all, regardless of ethnic background. Happiness in family life is most likely to occur when it is based on the principles of the gospel, says President Kyung, who is of both Maori and Chinese heritage. When you promote that, you get away from whether the church is for any particular group. When people understand the doctrine and see the church in its fullest sense, they see that it is universal. Joe Tai, a member of the Kashmir Ward, Christ Church Stake, is an example of one whose Maori heritage ultimately helped lead him to the church. His wife Helena was a church member, but was not active when the couple married. 10 years later, she decided to return to activity, and after several years, she was called to be the Relief Society president in her ward. Joe, while not interested in the church at the time, was supportive, taking her to and from meetings and members' homes because of health challenges that made walking difficult for her. For nearly 20 years, Helena invited missionaries to their home periodically to have dinner, and they would practice the discussions on Joe. But while he enjoyed their company, he resisted their message. That is, until one day, when he was researching information for his Wakapapa, or Maori genealogical line, he happened upon an account of his great-uncle, a Maori chief who had prophesied that a house of worship would be built on land where the temple now stands. The chief's contemporaries had scoffed at the notion, but for Brother Tai, the realization of fulfilled prophecy was astounding. "I almost fell off my chair," he recalls. "That was really the turning point for me." Soon thereafter, he was baptized, and the couple were sealed in the temple in February 2000. "There's a different atmosphere in our home now," Helena observes. "We're moving toward the same goals, and we're both heading in the same direction. It makes a difference." Throughout New Zealand, church members are moving toward goals of their own. More strong families increase temple attendance and an enhanced ability to make a positive difference in their communities. "We've come such a long way in just the past 5 years," says Elder Dill. "I look at the next 5 years and think, we can't even imagine where we'll be. We're a dedicated group of people, and we will keep on progressing." Gospel Topics: Testimony, Temple, Worldwide Church, Diversity. Sidebar: New Zealand at a glance. Population, 3.8 million. Capital city, Wellington, 163,800. Largest city, Auckland, 367,700. Church members, 90,000. Temples, 1, Hamilton, New Zealand Temple. Stakes, 25. The Auckland Stake, organized in 1958, was the first stake outside North America. 24 stakes are on the North Island, 1 stake on the South Island. Wards and branches, 210. Missions, 2. New Zealand Auckland and New Zealand Wellington Missions. End of sidebar. End of the article, Saints in the Land of the Long White Cloud, by Rebecca M. Taylor, Assistant Editor. Read by Scott Tippetts.